Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Today's guest is Tayo Roxon. Tayo is the CEO of UID Media. Hi, Tayo.
Hey, how you doing?
And the host of As Told by Nomads podcast. Let me actually just shut up here and ask you a question, Tayo. Tayo, how many continents did you live in before you turned 20?
I had lived in four different continents.
Four different continents. Wow.
Yes.
So I invited Tayo to talk to us about how an international student can succeed building their own business in the U.S. Tayo, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. I was talking earlier about the success you've had with this platform and how we have such similar goals. So I commend you on all the efforts that you've made, and I'm honored, really.
So, yeah, thanks for coming on. So Tayo, let me ask you, start by asking you, where were you born and how did you end up in the U.S.?
So I'm Nigerian. I was born in Lagos, Nigeria. My whole family is Nigerian, but my father is a diplomat. So what that meant was that we kept traveling. We traveled a lot, in different intervals. And, because of my dad's job to represent the Nigeria outside of the country, we would travel to Sweden, Burkina Faso, Vietnam. And then I also came to the U.S. And I came to the U.S. Primarily for my education. I came here to do my university. So that was 2007. Mm-hmm. I had applied to a school called Liberty University in Virginia, and I got accepted. It was right around the time we were posted to Vietnam. So I was living in Vietnam, Nigeria, and the U.S. at the time.
What is the longest you have stayed, like, in one country?
Probably Nigeria. I think Nigeria might be 12 years. U.S. is coming close now, catching up behind. But, yeah.
And you use a term to describe your status, which goes by TCK. I never heard that before. Do you want to explain what it is?
Yeah. So a TCK basically refers to someone who identifies with several cultures. TCK is an acronym for third culture kids. People typically primarily describe diplomatic kids or missionary kids as people with as people that are third culture kids. And I think it was coined in the 50s, but it's basically your culture, your parents' culture, and the mix of all the cultures you come across. So you basically, people that spend the formative lives or their formative periods of lives outside of the parents' cultures, they tend to relate to many homes, mm-hmm. and many identities. So it's just say, you're a third culture kid. So that's basically the term.
I see. And you were talking about, I was reading up earlier and in another interview, you were talking about a time where you felt like a minority in your own hometown, in your own country. Is mm-hmm. that right? How does that happen?
Well, sometimes when you travel, you pick up all these cultures. So before I went to Burkina Faso, I had a very strong Nigerian accent. And then I started to interact more with the American International School, and my accent sort of changed. You know, I'd only known how to play soccer at the time. And, when I went there, I started picking up other sports, basketball, tennis, and all these things. So when I came back to Nigeria, I was completely different from when I first left. So, I had a different
accent.
How old
were you when you left and when you came back?
I was like 10 going to 11, and I came back around 15, 16.
Okay.
So 15, basically, I think is when I came back. And, it was one of those things where people thought that I was essentially African American, and I was like, no, but I'm Nigerian. And you'd have conversations, and people would think, well, they would assume that I wouldn't understand what they're saying, but I'll be like, Of course I do. I mean, I was just here a few years ago, and I didn't lose that part of me. So it was stuff like that. I mean, you definitely get used to it at times, but sometimes it was like, oh gosh, do I have to explain myself to you again?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it was. Yeah.
Yeah. You also call it as a reverse culture shock, right?
Yeah. Some people experience it. I didn't experience it too much, but reverse culture shock is certainly a real thing. It's it's like when you sometimes it can help, it can, people can get depressed because they feel like they're supposed to feel at home in their passport country, but nothing seems familiar to them. Everything seems foreign, you know, their desires have changed, and all that is like whatever they people are supposed to love about their country, it's something that they create, you know, they don't crave anymore. So that certainly happens with a lot of TCKs, but yeah, I think for me, I started to become really comfortable who I was. Because I got started getting frustrated with allowing people to define me. So I was like, I'm not going to allow people to define me. I'm going to define myself first.
Yeah.
And then whatever you guys say, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And then I just became comfortable with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I experienced this when I'm originally from India, and the Indian culture is very collective. So when I came to the US, I became very individualistic. And when I go back, everyone is worried about you because the culture is collective. Your neighbors are worried about where you went last night or whether you came back home in time and so on. And that really started annoying me. So I can relate to a reverse culture shock, which I definitely have.
Wow, yeah. No, I hear you. And I talked to a lot of people that say that too. I was talking to an Australian lady. She was a guest on my podcast, and she said, you know, that was one of the hardest things for her. And she had to learn how to treat her country as a foreign country, so she would explore it more, and look at places that she hadn't seen, and then she started to get to feel a little better. But no, it's a real thing. It's a real thing.
Yeah. And during your time at Burkina Faso, you also learned something from books, which is very unlikely to learn from books, which is basketball. Tell me about that.
You done your homework. How do you know all these things? Okay, so this is the story. Reverse culture shock is something I didn't really feel. Culture shock is something I felt a lot. So when I first moved to Burkina Faso, I was, you know, I was initially excited. I was like, yeah, new country. I'm going to even learn American stuff. So, but I went there. Everybody didn't look like me. Everybody didn't sound like me. People were doing like all sorts of things. And, you know, I used to feel somewhat sad, and I'll go home and I'd cry and stuff like that. So I started to notice that people were playing, you know, not just soccer, people were playing basketball and stuff like that. So I went to the library, I read all the books on basketball that I could, the history and everything, just so I could know. And then I read all the magazines so I could know who the current players were. And then I went to the best basketball player on campus and I said, hey, you know, I know everything about basketball. I just need, you know, help to actually practice it. The one-on-ones became 2-on-2s and became 3-on-3s and 4-on-4. So I started to build friends that way. I was like, this is a way to make friends. I can use one of my favorite things, sports, to connect with other people. So I started doing more things like that.
Of basketball to get in touch with people and actually learn the basketball. That is so much better than what I imagined reading about it, which is you actually learn how to dribble the ball through a book. So this is way better.
I mean, I tried, but I was like, I wanted to make friends too, and I wanted to learn the game because I didn't want to be the guy that sucked because everybody was playing it, and I'm like, we don't want you on a team, so I want it to be good. So,
So, and why did you come to the U.S.?
Oh, for education. For your university.
For your undergrad?
Yes, for my undergrad.
So, what did you do in your undergrad?
What did I do for my undergrad? Mm-hmm. I studied marketing and business management. So
I see. And before you started UID Media, right? Before you started your company that you are currently a CEO of, which is the UID Media, what was life like at that time for you? What was going on with your life? I think you already graduated by then. What was it that you're doing?
Okay. I graduated. I had done what every international student does, basically take the first job they gave me an offer. You know, I had applied to over 85 jobs. They all said no. I was getting desperate. And then, I was thinking, man, I'm an OPT. I don't know if your audience knows that.
I'm 100% sure my audience will know what OPT means.
Okay. I just did want to say something. And people are like, what's that? Okay, so
yeah.
So I was thinking, I need to find a way to get a job. And so basically, you know, after 85 people said no, I was like, I'm just going to take whatever gets me. And then I did that. So
So I applied. They said yes. Cool. You know, and I basically I got the H-1B because I did it in time, and I was too scared of missing the deadline. So I was trying to make sure everything was done by the time I graduated. So I luckily got accepted, and I was on the H-1B for about 2 years. But I, you know, one of the things that I had always wanted to do as a kid was to own a media platform, whether it was small or big, but I wanted to make global impact. You know, my biggest role models were Nelson Mandela and Oprah Winfrey. I was the kid that ran home to watch Oprah Winfrey show. I started to get that longing to do something different, because the job started to feel boring. I felt it was very routine. I felt like I was getting bigger than the place. I wasn't getting challenged. So I made a trip to New York City to visit one of my mentors, and we also watched a basketball game in Madison Square Garden, which I'm a big basketball fan, as you now know.
Yeah.
So I came to the city. I was like, I must be here. This is where I need to be, and I need to find a way to come here, because I felt challenged. I remembered all the things I wanted to do. And the thing with New York City is that it's so fast-paced. Everything is like boom, 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 boom. And I was like, you know, I was in a sleepy town. I'd just become so complacent. So I decided to get my MBA, and I was only going to apply to New York schools for the most part. And I did. So I did, and I came here in 2013. I got accepted, you know.
And you were still working at that time, is it?
I was working, and then I was also taking my GMAT, because that's what you need to take for your GMAT. And then when I finally got my GMAT results, I was like, I need to quit. So I told them, hey, this is, you know, it's been great. And I'm going to have to quit because I need to go back to school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were fine with it. It wasn't like a bad, you know, breakup or stuff like that. So it worked out. And so I moved to New York City. And then I started, just once I got here, I started meeting as many people as I could. I started writing and interviewing other entrepreneurs. I started going to as many events as I could. And then I attended an Arena Huffington event for Huffington Post. She was doing something for a book called Thrive. And she just she joked about how her kids were making fun of her accent and how she wanted to change her accent at one point in her life. And I was like, yeah, that's me. You know, I always thought that if I had a different accent, I would make more friends. And then I decided to write the first title of my first ebook there. And I wrote it, and I basically said,
What was the title?
It's called The Ultimate Guide to TCK Living. It's on Amazon somewhere. Then I didn't stop there. I said, I wonder if there's a platform out there for people like me that look like they're not supposed to sound and sound like they're not supposed to look. And I decided to launch a podcast there. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning. You know, the podcast was a passion project. I didn't think it would turn into something else. I just felt like I didn't relate to a lot of the media outlets, and I wanted to do something more. So I did it. The podcast started to grow.
When was the first time? So you wrote this book in 2013, right?
Well, it's 2013, it's 2014, I believe.
2014, yeah. After you started your MBA, how did you get time to write while your MBA is going on? I know I have some friends who are doing MBA. I know that it's crazy, right? The hours are crazy.
It is crazy, but you know, you have to make sure the dream is powerful, is bigger than the fear. I mean, I wanted to make sure that I made an impact. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure I reached people's lives, so mm-hmm. I would find time. I don't sleep a lot, actually. So I make sure.
How many hours do you sleep? How many hours did you sleep at that time?
I'm very bad at sleeping. I think I average 3 hours of sleep most weeks, which is not good. But
3 hours? When did you go to sleep last night?
I went to sleep. I didn't know if I went to sleep because I was up till 7 today, and then I took a little nap, and then I woke up again at like 10 because I had a meeting. So I didn't sleep yesterday, last night. Yeah, slept. So,
how do you pull that?
Look, anyone listening, please do not do what I'm doing. Well, you know, the secret is, you know, I'm actually an alien. I'm the African Superman. But no, sometimes I don't know how I do it. I don't see it. Because, you know, during weekends, I try to sleep as much as I can. For most days, it's 3 to 4 hours. I haven't been too bad this week. Yesterday was just a bad day. I didn't sleep, but I was feeling too productive. I didn't want to sleep because I wanted to finish everything. So other than that, I'm good.
Yeah, so even at that time, while doing your MBA, you were not sleeping a lot, so you'd get time late in the nights and early in the mornings to write your book.
Oh, yeah. My classes were late at night. I was interviewing people from different parts of the world, so the time zones would change, you know? And I would find the time to just, like, you know, if I had to rush home, I'd say, hey, I've got 30 minutes or 1 hour here. I'll just do this and run back. But yeah, you know, that was just kind of what I was doing.
Yeah. And so you started your podcast while doing MBA. And what was the best thing that happened to your podcast in the first year in 2014?
It got picked up by Entrepreneur Magazine, and they called it the number two business podcast of 2014. And I didn't know what to feel. I was like, wow, I didn't even know that this would even be seen as a business podcast, but this is crazy. So, you know, I was incredibly humbled.
Who did the Entrepreneur know about it?
Well, you know how people make lists of things, top 10, top this? It's just people just like, you know, I think that's even a better type of thing where you have no idea. You're not voting. You know, people who have influence just say, hey, you know, I listened to this podcast. This is why I think is the number two. And I was like, it's the same thing with the Inc. one that happened last year. I never know these things.
Yeah.
So the same guy that sent me an email said, hey, look, your podcast is here. I was like,
so wait a minute. So you didn't even know firsthand that it was there.
I had no idea. I was getting ready to go to bed. Ha, funny. I was saying bed. I actually was going to sleep at a good time this time. I was going to sleep at like 11 or 10. And then I just got a Facebook message. And saying, hey, congrats on that Entrepreneur mention. I said, what are you talking about? He said, yeah, you were higher than John Lee Dumas and all these people. I was like, but wait, what? This is the link. And I clicked it, and then I was so humbled because I had no idea. And I think that was the beginning of when I thought that I could actually make it a business. Because then I was in my MBA, and I was thinking, you know, I've got to find a job again as an international student. Or I can really try and be an entrepreneur, and I can take advantage of my OPT and start now. So when my OPT comes, I'm actually technically having 2 years of experience. So that's what I started to think. So I started thinking that way and thinking of ways I could leverage that, essentially creating my own resume. So anytime, even if I needed to get a job, I'd be like, hey, well, I've built a media company in the last 2 years, and this is the audience I've built. This is something I can replicate to your company.
So that is when you launched UID Media, is it? After the
I launched it around that. After I'd seen some success, I said maybe I should just create a platform for other people to share their stories. You know, not trying to make any money, but just have people come here and really share their stories and talk about ways they can use their difference to make a difference. That's my mission statement.
Yeah.
Use your difference to make a difference. I was like, yeah, well, why not, you know, have people from different parts of the world just really share? So now it's like 60 writers in 6 continents.
So when you were doing your MBA, what visa were you on at that time?
I was on the F1 student visa.
And would on F1 visa, are you allowed to start your company? Were you allowed to start your company on your visa?
Yeah, if you have, I talked to the lawyer at the time, and since I was 1 year in, I could. Yes, you were allowed. I didn't know that was possible. You were allowed to, so okay. I did. I opened an LLC, and.
Nice. So
that's basically been it.
It's good to see people who actually have done it. And we have had lawyers here on the podcast before who told how someone can do that. So listeners can check out that episode as well. But how about your speaking? When did you start speaking?
I really started speaking last year, so 2015. I'm a talker, as you start to, you can probably already tell. I like to talk, but started speaking professionally last year, and it was about a year ago from now. In Northern Virginia, it was FIGT conference, which is stands for Family and Global Transition. And it was basically for people like us who identify with several cultures. And then I moved on to other conferences. The World Bank invited me. Because of that conference, it's a millennial conference called the Next Gen Summit, and then I've started speaking in schools, and it just started to get more and more. But that's what I always like to tell people. You know, when you have a passion, just follow it, because you never know what's going to happen. You know, even if you're not making any money initially, because you know this wasn't necessarily making any money. It was just more of something that was getting attention, and it was giving the people a chance to see a world they had never seen. Kind of like what you're doing on this podcast, where people, you know, there are many immigrants in the world, but they don't know what the opportunities are there for. So people become aware of the opportunities, and they want to know more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's one I always encourage them to continue, no matter what.
Yeah. So you've had many successes that you talked about, right? Like Entrepreneur Magazine featured you. You got a chance to speak at the World Bank, all because of the UID media and your podcast, As Told by Nomads. What is something that you struggled with? Is there anything that you launched that didn't go as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had more failures than successes. So I don't want the audience to think that it's been like that. When I started the UID Media, one of the first things I wanted to do was create a UID Media course. One of the courses was for international students, how to, you know, succeed in U.S. And I had gotten like six people and convinced them to think that that I could help them launch this and we could sell this together. It would be like this Udemy or online school that would succeed. Mm-hmm. So I invested so many hours. I recorded 7 hours worth of content for my course. And I went around, posted it on Facebook, put it every single where, and talked to as many schools as I could. And when it launched, I had no sale, you know, no sale. And I, you know, you can imagine I put my reputation on the line. I had done everything. Mm-hmm. And people were like, oh, excited. And then I, you know, there were nobody got the sale. And that was because I didn't even know what the audience wanted. I just assumed that they would want it. That was one of my first mistakes. Another failure I had was in your MBA, you're allowed to get jobs after a certain period of time. So I started working at this startup, and you know, I was going okay. I was doing the typical, you know, normal punching numbers things, but you know, a new management came in one time, and I guess she wanted a new team, and she mm-hmm. just called me in the office, said, you know, we're letting you go, and wow. I want to go in a different direction, and the time, you know, it was just like my only source of income. So I yeah. was thinking, what am I gonna so I was thinking, what am I gonna do? And then I was really down on myself, and I decided to just put all my time into UID Media, and I just reached out to some of the podcast guests that I reached to at the time and said, hey, what do you think about sharing your story in written format and just really talking about things we talk about on podcasts? I want to just give you guys the audience. I will give you access on the back end and basically make this sort of like a Huffington Post, but for people with global mindsets. So I just started focusing on that, and I put in the time, and luckily it worked out, because there were many times it didn't look like it worked out, because 2 months after that, I found out that I was $20,000 in debt. The reason why was you know, the next semester was, this is around November, so January was the next semester. I needed to pay the school fees, and I, you know, I just didn't know where to find the money, right? Because I was like, okay, I want to graduate my friends. I don't want to take a semester off, but I don't have $20,000 to pay because because mm-hmm. schools can get a bit expensive. So I decided to basically stalk the school. I was like, hey, look, this is why you're going to give me a $5,000 scholarship, and then I'm going to work for the remaining $15,000. So, because at the time I was the social chair on campus, so I had done a lot of things on campus. So I convinced them to say, look, I'm very committed to the cause of the school. So, you know, that must be worth some sort of scholarship. Mm-hmm. And I told them my thing, and I was like, maybe there's some student work relationship. You know, I'll work the hours, you know, mm-hmm. you know, and it would translate to my school fees. So I did that for 2 weeks, talked to the dean, talked to everybody. So at times it said no, at times it said yes. And I was like, if you don't do it, I can't come to school. And then I think like 2 days before school started, they said, we've talked to everybody. There's the way we can make this work. And I was like, yes.
So they gave you nice. So yeah. You actually talked people into giving you a scholarship.
Yeah. I was like, look, my grades are this. Mm-hmm. I'm the social chair. I launched the first career fair. You know, I'm a good ambassador for the school. Mm-hmm. So you should just give me at least this. And I will work for the remaining $15,000. I'm sure there's some student. I'll work for any teacher, any office you want me to do. I'll grade or do whatever thing. Paper, grade it. Uh-huh. Just let me
let me do that. And then I was like, okay, fine. So, but yeah, I had to come up.
So what did you? So you got some discount from the university in the tuition, and what did you work for the remaining $15,000?
Yeah, so I was working in the administrative office. I would, I would work 20 to 40 hours depending on the week, and I basically would, you know, work in the career office, and I would take phone calls, respond to emails,
yeah,
do what students, you know, all that stuff. So,
and this was at the same time that you are building UID Media on the
yeah,
side,
I was
right?
building UID at the same time, and I was thinking, oh gosh, no money here, no this. So I, you know, I just stayed creative, and I started working towards that. And then, you know, my main focus was just to continue to be consistent and get stories and episodes out. So once I got that, you know, thing started to get, you know, more noticeable, I emailed Arianna Huffington. I said, hey, I didn't even think she'd respond. I just emailed her. I said, you might not know me, but at your event, I was inspired by you to launch a podcast. And since then, it's been ranked by this, and I even have this platform where I have writers from different parts of the world, and I just hit send. And I said, I just want to thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And that was it, because I was like, you know, thank you for inspiring me. And she responded, and she said, hey, I really like your story. Thank you for emailing me. Would you mind writing for the Huffington Post? Mm-hmm. I was like, what? Huh? I was just going to thank you, but okay. So, you know, from there, I started to improve my exposure and all that kind of stuff. And then
yeah,
more opportunities started to come to do stuff like that. So it's really been up and down. And the downs have been really down. And many times you're like, you talk to your mom and dad, and they're like, I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't know where the money's going to come from, or I don't know, you know, what's going to happen. And then I think Nigerian culture sometimes is like some Asian culture where you should be a lawyer, doctor, or this or that. So I was, you know, I was telling my parents, I don't know if I'm going to do what you want me to do after school and get the job you want. I think I'm really liking this entrepreneurship thing, but dad, it's really tough, but I think I still like it, but I don't know where the money is coming from yet, but I want to do it. And you could hear them a little nervous about that, but, you know, they stayed supportive. So that was good.
Yeah, that's good. So what do you consider as the like the best thing about the path that you have chosen so far?
I think it's fulfillment. You know, I think you can make a lot of money and not feel fulfilled, but I think when you get to a point where you feel like what you're doing is touching someone's lives, making an impact, like whenever I get an email from someone that loved an episode and they send me a 2-page paper basically crying and talking about how they felt they weren't alone, that to me means more. And that reminds me of why I'm doing that. So feeling that sense of fulfillment that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do is really the feeling that I like to come away with. And I think, you know, with my story, it's still growing. I'm still like, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's the idea of always being creative. I think as an international student, you have to learn how to be creative to live in a foreign environment. It's, you know, I didn't, at the time I came to my MBA, I thought my only path would be an H-1B, but then me knowing that I didn't want to be that, I was like,
what is the path that you're taking now?
Yeah, I was really like, I'm taking now. I'm working with a lawyer to finalize my O-1 visa.
Yeah.
I did not know of an O-1 visa before I came to the school, but that was a risk I took, and I was like, I don't know. So, but there's always like some ways. There's an O-1 visa you can do, and some countries can, if you have a company which you can open, and you have the right amount of investment, I think you can even get like a structured visa through that way. My company's not like that because I'm not, I don't think you have to make like $500,000 or have that type of investment. Yeah. So there are always ways. You just have to talk to the lawyer and say, hey, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. Owen is for people of extraordinary ability, I believe. And with all the things that you said, you certainly are up there.
I didn't think I was. That's the thing. I thought, because I had heard of it after, I was like, I don't know. And then some people are like saying maybe try. I was like, okay, I'll try. So that's what we're working right now. But it's always when I speak to international students, I always tell them there's you know, just because you're an international student doesn't mean you can't have a job you want. Mm-hmm. So You just have to be more creative.
Yes, you have to be more creative and talk to a lawyer. And another thing that I heard people say is, if your lawyer says that you can't do it because of your visa status, you just find another lawyer.
Because
there is always a way to do it.
That's exactly. Because one lawyer told me no, and I was like, I started to get really, really sad. And I was thinking, man, maybe I should just really find a job. And then someone said, hey, that's not true. This lawyer did this. And then I was like, all right, okay. I'm just going to find another lawyer.
Yeah. So if someone wants to find out more about you, Tayo, where is the best place to do it?
You can find me on Twitter at Tayo Roxon, or you can email me tayoroxon@uidmag.com. But I respond to everything on Twitter, Tayo Roxon. You can subscribe to the podcast As Told by Nomads. I'm usually there as well. And yeah, Facebook, Tayo Roxon, LinkedIn, Tayo Roxon.
I was going to say that. You are the only Tayo Roxon in the world, looks like.
Just type that. Yeah, I should be fine.
Tayo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for making me go back memory lane.
Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again, and have an amazing day.